Paper, and we'll convene as a subcommittee until the other two members get here, but we have a couple bills I think we can probably work through, and we've got some agreement upon. I would open up a public hearing on House Bill 2429. Mr. Dodson.
House Bill 2429 makes offense of acting as a vehicle dealer without certificate on unlawful trade practice. No revenue impact, no fiscal impact.
Okay, and we have a couple of witnesses. Monty King, please come up. And Representative Chapler was here. He said he didn't want to testify. I thought he was going to be here. Monty, go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Monty King, Executive Director, Oregon Independent Auto Dealers. Representative Schaffler had testified earlier, and he's got some other stuff to do, so, but he's still in support of it, as is Representative Dalton, the other sponsor. Basically, the story is still that somebody who acts as a vehicle dealer should have the same criteria under unfair trade practices as a dealer who is licensed, and that's basically what this bill does.
We're now operating as a full committee.
And that's really what the bill does. Because there's no fiscal impact, because anything that goes on will go on in the public arena, and if a consumer is injured, they can go to their attorney and get their injuries taken care of through the civil court. So there isn't anything anybody else has to do.
And there was an issue earlier on in the Attorney Senate Bill, or House Bill 2455, but I understand you're working out on the other side.
Mr. Chairman, we have reached agreement on all of the tow issues with the tow industry and the mechanics industry, and hopefully we'll see that House bill very shortly. We're going to do everything in 2455, and everybody's happy.
That was a very nice one. Any further questions on this witness? Thank you very much, Monty. We have no further people signed up for this, so we will close public hearing on the work session on House Bill 2429.
Sir, do we have any amendments on that?
No. I don't think so, no.
Okay. Then I would move House Bill 2429 to the floor with a due-pass recommendation.
Senator Walker, excuse me, moves House Bill 2429 to the floor with a due-pass recommendation. Any comment? Discussion around 2429, the auto dealer unlawful trade practice.
No problem.
There's agreement that's been come to with all the parties, and so everybody's here. Do you have any questions or any concerns about it? There are no objections. The bill is passed in form of a due-pass recommendation, House Bill 2429. Carrier, and then we have a burning desire.
I'll carry that bill just so Senator Walker doesn't get a big head that she carries everything.
She's in a serious race. Okay, we'll skip around a little bit more. We'll open up a work session on House or Senate Bill 515.
Senate Bill 515 modifies requirements for seller's disclosure or disclaimer related to sale of residential real property. No revenue impact, no fiscal impact, and there are dash one amendments.
There are dash one?
Yes.
They are. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jana Jarvis for the Oregon Association of Realtors. I think you have the dash one amendments in front of you. We spoke to most of these, I believe, during the initial hearing. But if you notice, the first group of amendments speaks to, on lines 2, 3, and 4, speaks to the concerns raised by DEQ. So we addressed that in those amendments. The amendments beginning on line 5, ending on line 17, are changes regarding homeowners associations. We were attempting to address concerns that had been brought to us with respect to that. On line 18, the section that we adopted from Senator Walker's bill that she asked us to at the original hearing. And then on line 23, and through the second page, that is to make a correction. There are technical changes because they had left out disapproving the seller's disclosure in the initial form.
you've been involved with the work group and with the commissioner.
Yes, I have the commissioner here. If you have any questions,
Yes, I do have one question. Let's see. I want to make sure we put it. You put in the exact language from my section F into your.
That was the intention, Senator Walker.
Yeah.
We took it over that way.
Yeah.
I believe so.
Okay. I think that's right. This is the first time I've had to see these, but you're making that representation, and so I trust you because
yes,
I can't find it at the moment.
Line 19 on the dash one amendments on the first page. Yes, that's your section.
And then my other question would be, Ms. Harriet Heisey was here and spoke at length, and a lot of her issues I thought could be dealt with at the time of the purchase, not in a, you know, in an escrow statement, or what do they call that when you put money down on a house?
Your earnest money.
Earnest money, thank you.
Earnest money. I just bought a place. I should
I just forgot to.
We discussed that, and a lot of those issues I thought that she raised should go in earnest money. But you did have a conversation with her and adopted some of her concerns.
Well,
this.
She had not sent us any proposed language. We had been working with a gentleman by the name of Rich Vile and Barbara Kantz.
Oh.
And these sections from line 5 through line 17 spoke to some issues that they had asked us to add to the seller's disclosure.
And they work with, I think, but they work with homeowners.
Correct. They work with some homeowners associations.
Okay. And I am satisfied that you have done your due diligence and completed your work.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Discussions? We're under a work session. The chair will move the dash one amendments. Discussion? Objections? So ordered. And the chair would move Senate Bill 515 to the floor as amended with the due pass recommendation. Any questions? Discussion? Objections? So ordered. Anybody have a brief?
I'd like to because I'd like to just talk about the mold issue a little bit.
Another forum. It sounds very good. That would be very good. I'd love to have you do that.
And I want to thank them for working on it.
Yeah, thank you very much for working. This was, I know you folks did a lot of work and really appreciate that. So thank you very much. Okay, open up a public hearing on House Bill 2245. We'll go back to the order now. Mr. Dodson.
House Bill 2245 increases licensing period for occupational therapists from 1 to 2 years, modifies established license fee requiring occupational therapy licensing board to establish license and renewal fees, modifies executive secretary position to director, applies occupational therapist license and license renewal application beginning June 1, 2004. No revenue impact and has a minimal fiscal impact, no statement issued.
Very good. Welcome. Please introduce yourself and commence your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Nelson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeffrey Rome. I'm a public member of the Occupational Therapy Licensing Board. To my right is Peggy Smith, who's the executive director. I'm here to request your support for House Bill 2245. House Bill 2245 will provide the following, if I can summarize. It increases the licensing period from 1 year to 2 years. It requires the board to establish license and renewal, license renewal fees. It removes reinstatement fees, and it redesignates the executive secretary title to director. The board is proposing changing the licensing period from 1 to 2 years. Biennial licensing will reduce workload associated with license renewals, both for licensees, for board members, and for staff. Current regulation requires 15 points, roughly contact hours of continuing education per year for licensees, this is also tied to the renewal cycle. The board has met with licensees and been made aware of a need to expand the time period for completing continuing education. If I could elaborate, a 2-year period allows more time to participate in relevant CE. Some licensees choose to dedicate a concentrated period of time over 2 years, and this would allow them to do that. Some years there are excellent CE offerings, and other years there are not, and this gives more flexibility for that. House Bill 2245 also requires the board to establish license and renewal fees. Some of the fees are currently in statute, and the board is requesting authority to adopt fees through the administrative legislative process, which brings the process in line with other health-related licensing boards and allows for flexibility to deal with unforeseen circumstances. This fee process ensures continued legislative oversight in that any fees adopted must be approved by DAS and ratified by the Legislative Assembly. This bill also removes the statutory requirement for reinstatement fees. Currently, licensees whose licenses have lapsed for less than 3 years are obliged to pay back fees when they renew their licenses. Persons whose licenses have elapsed also have to make up CE credits, and there are additional costs associated with satisfying these credits. The number of lapsed licensees who renew is small. Reinstatement fees may represent a real hardship to persons who have not worked for the last few years. We estimate a loss of revenue of about $1,000 for that loss of fees. House Bill 2245 also redesignates the Executive Secretary to Director to update and more clearly reflect current responsibilities. Again, I ask for your support of House Bill 2245. If you have any questions.
Do you want to present some testimony?
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Peggy Smith. I'm the Executive Officer, and I don't have additional testimony. I'm here if there are questions more specific to the administration.
No. Questions?
Yes, Senator. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess you didn't make it very clear to me why we need to eliminate the maximum fee rather than just raising it. And, I mean, you said because you want to be able to set it by rule, and it has to be ratified by the legislature anyway once you set it by rule. But in my experience, it's much more difficult, or the legislature is much more reluctant to take a look at fees that have already been ratified and in place for a while than not. I mean, I would prefer to keep the maximum fee in the law and not have them come back and ask for approval after the fact that they've raised the fees. So I just, you know, you haven't made a case for me why you want the maximum fee out of statute.
Do you want to comment on it?
Mr. Chair and Senator Beyer, as part of the board's budget request this time for 0305 biennium, we are requesting a fee increase. The fees are in statute. While we are asking for a fee increase, it seemed appropriate if we were going to request that the fees be taken out of statute, that would be the time to do that. It was another way not to circumvent the legislature, but to allow the process. Can I back up just a little bit? This biennium, the board has experienced, compared to other boards, probably not a great deal of enforcement activities, but compared to our history, we probably have tripled the amount of enforcement activities that we had. And that was because our history, there was almost none. We will be able to get through 0103 without raising the fees. We can even get through 0305, but it will not leave us with a sufficient ending balance to go into the next biennium. And I realize that's not the role of this committee to get really detailed into the fees, but that's one of the reasons that we also are addressing taking the fees out of the statute. So in the event that another situation comes up with the extra enforcement activities, that we will be able to continue to regulate, to investigate, and take disciplinary action if it's merited. And the base budget just didn't cover that.
Mr. Chair, I mean, I understand you want to go to double license, 2-year licensing, and, you know, you actually want to deal with fees. This is the time to do it. But yet, and I don't know how many, and I don't know if you can answer this, how many other of the occupational licensing boards have their maximum fees in statute, or whether or not we have to ratify them afterwards, after the fact, on a fee increase. I believe the nursing board is one we ratify after the fact. I don't know about the rest of them, but I know that for the people who pay the fees,
you know, they don't necessarily support when fee increases go up, and then the boards come in front of the legislature and say, oh, we did this 2 years ago, so you just have to ratify it now. And it's a backdoor attempt to be able to get what you want without coming to us. And that's a concern I have.
You want to respond to that?
That's an interesting way of looking at it. The other is that it does allow you to adjust fees in a way that keeps the budgets in line, revenues in line with known expenditures. Having them in the statute, there's more, not just one fee. There's renewal fees, there's initial fees. Makes it difficult to do that. I think that's the case that Ms. Smith was making, is that in order to have ending balances, you have to project out several years. And to me, I'm not an occupational therapist. I'm a regular public member. It seems to me that managerially, this would be the way to do it. I really don't know how many other licensing boards have their fees in regulation or in statute, or whether they're outside this way. We're comfortable with this as a board.
Further questions?
No, I understand the need to, if you need to raise a maximum cap in statute, that I understand that. And if you, you know, you go into it from 1 year to 2 year, it's currently $75, make it 150, make it 200, whatever it is, but don't make it. So the legislature has come back and, after the fact, retroactively grant approval for fee increases.
Okay.
I would like to find out, I guess, and perhaps Mr. Dawson could help, on how many of the other licensing boards, you know, if this is standard practice to give that a statute, and I guess, you know, trying to swim against the tide, but it'd be interesting to have that information.
Okay, that's good. Well, we can do that, and we can look into some of these, try and give you guys a little bit of time to think about how some of Senator Byers' concerns and get back to us. We won't go into work session. I'll write some of these answers, and if things all work out, we'll just get this thing done. But take some time, and we'll get the right answers.
One more quick question. How many occupational licensed people are there?
Do you have the exact number?
Mr. Chair and Senator Byer, we have 1,278, and that includes both occupational therapists and occupational therapy assistants. And to go back to your question as to how other boards do it, I can't give you the specific number, but I'm in a suite where there are 8 other licensing boards, and I don't know that all of them have their fees out of statute, but I know probably most of them do.
Yeah, well, we'll get some information and we'll pull over the work session on this. Further questions of these two witnesses? Thank you very much for coming. We'll keep working with you and keep working this bill. Close public hearing on 2245, and not going to a work session at this time, but we'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 2333. Okay. Mr. Dodson.
House Bill 2333 modifies law governing certain amounts that may be included by amortization in rates of electric utility regulated by the Public Utility Commission. Provides that amortized amounts may have rate impact in excess of normal limits under specific circumstances, and allows certain electric utility customers to prepay their share of deferred amount, requires the PUC to establish rules to calculate and execute prepayment of deferred amount. No revenue impact, no fiscal impact.
Oh, very good. Wow, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Senate Business and Labor Committee. I'm John Brenham, and I'm representing Idaho Power Company today on House Bill 2333A. Idaho Power is an investor-owned utility primarily serving Idaho customers, but we have about 17,000 customers in the state of Oregon, located around Ontario, Vail, Jordan Valley. We're heavy on hydroelectric production. We have 17 dams, 3 of those that are on the Snake River, and when we get in times of prolonged drought, which we've been in for a while, we have to go out in the market and buy electricity. This bill applies only to Idaho Power and only allows us to go to the PUC for an adjustment in some certain costs. During the power year 2000-2001, we bought extra power that's quite a few times more than what we usually do. And in the case in Idaho, Idaho PUC has a power cost adjustment process in which we go back every year and adjust our rates either up or down depending on what we have to do in the marketplace with electricity. That's not the case in Oregon. In Oregon, we're capped on deferred costs of the amortization process of 6% a year. That was raised from 3 to 6% just last session. But at that 6%, we had to go out to the marketplace and buy $14 million in that period, 2000-2001. As you can see, if we're doing $27 million annually in billings in Oregon, an additional $14 million was quite an impact. In Idaho, we ask for approximate payoff of about 6 or 7 years. The Idaho PUC, however, told us to collect it within a two-year period, and we've done that. Our power rates in Idaho went up over 30%. Fortunately for us, next month that's over, and we'll be back down to a more regular a norm, customary rate over there. However, Oregon's cost, because of that 6% amortization, is going to take us almost 20 years to pay off. And that puts us really into another generation. So I went to the business community, industrial customers, Northwest Utilities, Association of Oregon Industries, and Citizen Utility Board in December asking for some legislative fix. And the original bill didn't suit those particular interests. And so they ask us to change it. They ask us to apply only that 1 year and that it only apply to Idaho Power. So the A version does that. The way it's written, it applies only to Idaho Power Company and just to that one payoff year. In addition, along the way, we picked up the support of the Public Utility Commission, and you can see that Commissioner Byers here in support of the bill today. In addition, both CUB and ICNU asked that we address some other issues, but we didn't have to do it in the form of statute. And to my back of my testimony day, you'll see a letter that Idaho Power Company has done addressing those additional issues. One, we promised them we wouldn't ask for more than an additional 4%, that is a total of 10% a year, and we agreed to that. That will allow us to pay off in a little over 6 years, so that shortens it considerably. They also ask of us that we not ask that it go into effect before April 1st of 2004. That was in reaction to businesses that are customers of ours. They wanted some lead time to be able to plan for that increase in power rate, and that we would request of the PUC to hold the hearing in our Eastern Oregon service area, and they have done that. PUC has agreed to do that. So I'll point out again that all this does is allow us to go to PUC and make a request. As I say, we now have the support of the business community, we have the support of CUB, and we have the support of the PUC. And I think there's one more thing that's contained in the bill at the request of ICNU, and that was to allow business customers of ours an opt-out. That is, PUC allows us about a 9% return on that money, and in today's marketplace, the company could go out and borrow money at a much lower rate than 9%, pay off what we determine their obligation is going to be, and then that gives them a little bit of a break on that interest. I would ask that the committee support the bill.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senators, for the record, Lee Beyer, Commissioner with the Oregon Public Utility Commission. Mr. Brenneman, I think it's covered the bill pretty well. Idaho Power is unique in Oregon in terms of its small service territory, and frankly, they have the lowest rates in the state currently, and I don't think that this is probably going to move them up off of that position at all. This is a reasonable request given the situation that was there. We support it as a commission and commend the company for working very hard with the customer groups to come up with a proposal that meets everybody's expectations and satisfaction.
Mr. Brenneman, is there any Oregon statute that Idaho Power is an exempt from?
In our side of the business, we call that the Idaho Power provision.
Mr. Chair and Senator Metzger, I think if I'd have been smart last session, I would have asked for a gas company exemption to include me in the bill that went from 3 to 6%. I got kind of tied up with some bad feelings out there, and it put us off one session for solving our problem.
Mr. Chair, I should make it clear, and I should have said this a minute ago. The bill provides the opportunity for the company to come in and ask for that. It doesn't necessarily say that the commission would agree to that. That depends on the record, and there's a normal proceeding that would go. It just covers their ability to ask.
No, Mr. Brenneman came into my office, and so I've already been briefed.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Well, very much. There's no further witnesses signed up for this, so we close the public hearing on the work session on 2333 and discussions about the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move to the floor with the due pass recommendations.
Senator Breyer has moved to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussions? Objections? So order. Senator Breyer, you said you wanted to do any of this?
Yeah, please.
All right. Public hearing on House Bill 2439. Is that where we're at now? No, 2389. I'm sorry. 2389. Mr. Dodson.
House Bill 2389A engrossed establishes notice of defect procedure for recovering damages for residential construction defects prior to initiating arbitration or commencing a court action against a contractor, subcontractor, or supplier. Requires the contractor to deliver notice of this procedure. The consumer notification form to owner was specified in language. No revenue impact, no fiscal impact.
Good afternoon. Scott Berry, representing the Oregon Building Industry Association. And today, House Bill 2389, which is in front of you, is designed to address the construction defect issues in Oregon under the 10-year statute of repose. I'm going to talk a little bit about what the bill does, and then Ron Manza with the professional insurance agents will kind of talk about the reasons we need the bill. The first section of the bill just covers the definitions. Part 2, Section 2, is really the meat of the bill. And it requires that before filing a claim in court or beginning or commencing arbitration on a construction defect claim during that 10-year period where the contractor is responsible or on the line for those defects, it requires that the consumer notice or notify the contractor that there is a construction defect issue, and allows for in Section 4 the inspection by the contractor if they would like to come in, take a view, a visual examination initially, and then a follow-up inspection to determine the nature of the damage and or defect, and then offer to repair the defect and or offer some financial payment to take care of the defect again before this process moves on into the courts or into arbitration. Under Section 5, if the owner accepts or rejects the offer to take payment or to allow full repairs, the if they accept the offer, then obviously the work would go on and or the payments would be made. If they reject the offer, then they are free to move off to court or to arbitration, whatever their original intention was. Under Section 6, the statutes are told, so the 10-year statute of repose, along with a number of other statutes, are told so that during this process, the consumer doesn't actually lose any time. In other words, if they were actually to file their claim at 9 years and 10 months, and this process took 3 months, which puts them past the 10-year statute of repose, they would still have 2 months after this process was finished to file their claim. So it just tolls all those statutes so that they're not losing any time. It also provides, under the contract from the contractor to the consumer, a notice that this process exists and kind of talks about what the consumer needs to do before filing a claim or going or commencing arbitration. And finally, the bill is sort of patterned after what's been very successful in the Construction Contractors Board, which is available to the consumer during the first year after construction, and that is to get the consumer and the contractor together to talk about the problems and the natures of the defect before they go to court. The track record there is about 70% of the issues are solved before they move on to the hearings officer panel once the consumer and the contractor get together. That's the idea behind this bill. We're not aware of any opposition at this time. It came out of the House committee after quite a bit of work with the trial attorneys and a number of other groups, 6-0, and out of the House floor, 58-0. So that's a quick summary of what the bill does, and I'll let Ron talk about why we need it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ron Manza. I'm representing the Professional Insurance Agents of Oregon and Idaho. I'm an agent with Stewart & Tino Insurance Agency in Portland, and I hold the Certified Property and Casualty Insurance designation. The Professional Insurance Agents of Oregon is a statewide trade association of independent agents representing a large variety of insurance companies, and we serve as clients both individual homeowners and construction contractors. We see this bill as a process of communication that will benefit both the homeowners and the contractor. The agent community has watched the insurance market change dramatically in the last few years. The standard carriers, the majority of, have exited the construction market, and new carriers have come in, basically surplus or specialty line carriers, who are writing the coverage at a much higher price and usually with constricted coverages. Because of this market, the association board formed a task force, of which I am the chair. The members of the board are primarily insurance agents with contracting accounts that they represent, and insurance company representatives, the majority of which are no longer writing contractors. The task force has considered the issue, and we believe that HB 2389 amended is a positive step to help stabilize costs. And very importantly, it will show insurance carriers that Oregon is a proactive on construction litigation. We strongly urge you to pass the bill, and I'll be glad to answer any insurance questions you may have.
Questions?
One final piece I might add. Yeah, there is an amendment in right now, and that was an agreement we had on the House side to get these amendments in. Unfortunately, I received them yesterday at 10 a.m., and so they weren't able to be ready today. Under the original bill, under the statute, under the tolling piece of the statutes, we just sort of arbitrarily said any statutes that affect this issue will be told. Legislative Council didn't like that language, wanted the actual statutes that needed to be told. We got that information from the trial attorneys yesterday morning, and there are four statutes dealing with tort claims, contract claims, product liability claims, and condominium claims, and those will all be told as well as the original statute of repose, and that amendment should be ready early next week.
You're just going to put the specific statute in there.
Exactly.
Very good. Questions? Thank you, gentlemen. We'll close the public hearing and wait for the amendments. Thank you very much. Open up a public hearing on House Bill 2439.
House Bill 2439 allows adoption of rule reducing minimum required spacing for manufactured dwellings separated by fire resistive wall. No revenue impact, no fiscal impact.
Okay. Mr. Brenneman again, and Ted Hughes and Don Miner.
You mean all three of those gentlemen have agreed, Mr. Chair,
on something? Well, I see they're all at the same table.
Well, they didn't all make it.
I know, they're not here.
They totally trust him now to represent them.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Don Miner, here on behalf of Oregon Manufactured Housing Association, to speak on behalf of this bill. Existing Oregon law allows manufactured homes to be placed immediately adjacent to one another, so long as there's a firewall between them, outside of a park. But you're not allowed to do it in a park. Years ago, there used to be a requirement there'd be 15 feet of space between homes and parks. I think in the early 80s, that was changed to 10 feet. And it worked real well. No one ever thought about putting them immediately adjacent to each other. But there are new manufactured home products that have been created. They look essentially like two double-wide or single-wide homes pushed together to look like a double-wide with a firewall between them. And that allows for a little bit better density on an acre of land, a few more dwellings per acre, which allows us to better compete. It allows actually a better use of the space in terms of yards. So instead of having this 10 feet between them, you can push the homes together and use some portion of that for a larger yard on the other side of the home. That's the purpose of the bill. Again, the bill would allow the Building Codes Division to adopt rules, as they have already done outside of a park, to require, though, that there be an adequate fire separation between the two structures. With that, I'll conclude my remarks.
Thank you. Questions?
Mr. Chair, I don't know who'd want to live that close to their neighbor, but...
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, duplexes. Essentially, they would become duplexes.
Oh.
They can be very large. They can also be two stories. Common wall units is what they become.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Don told me he had a board meeting and asked if I'd come in and support it, and I'd just say whatever he said was good. This is a good bill.
We're really kind of worried that you guys are okay. Sounds very good. Further questions? Thank you. We'll close the public hearing on 2439. Open up a work session.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I move House Bill 2439 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Right. Senator Walker has moved House Bill 2439 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
There's not even an amendment on this bill.
Not an amendment. This is good. Any further discussion? Any objection? So ordered. I guess I can carry this bill. Everybody else is carrying bells, and we know what Senator Walker.
No.
That's right.
All right, so we have no further.
Well, it happened to 2245. Oh, we did that first.
We did that first.
And we're holding 2333.
2333 is.
I had to step out.
No, 23. We passed out 2333. It's the Idaho Power amortization.
Which is the fee one?
2245.
That's one we're holding.
That's one we're holding. Okay. All right.
Okay. Any further discussion? Any other comments for the committee?
Yeah.
If not, we will close the public hearing on the Senate committee.
You complain about being out of committee already?
Oh, I'm just, wow. Now I have an hour.